And now, SCORE senior football analyst Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Indeed. Back on Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum. Thanks for listening. He is the SCORE senior football NFL analyst. Joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Hub, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. I've reached the point where I keep trying to decide if being senior is a good thing or a concerning thing.
Well, you know, other than that, I would go with senior. You're not the AARP NFL reporter. We haven't called you that yet. So
thank you. Yeah.
So, but let's take a bigger view since we'll take advantage of all your experience. You're an experienced NFL reporter. How about that?
There you go.
Ryan Poles had a propensity in the previous years of redoing the roster with every move he could, everything he could think of, that frequently involved trading down, acquiring draft picks, making whatever he could of it, just getting quantity of bodies and hoping to find something, and with some success. And now we've entered an odd stage of confluence of Ryan Poles needing blue players, quality players, because they're on the rise. And also NIL money has seen a lot of what used to be depth in a draft disappear. A lot of that depth now appears to be staying in school because we've heard taught that this draft is not as deep, that it falls off the cliff after the fourth round or in the fourth round. I don't know. You tell me what you believe and how this is going to affect what Ryan Poles might do compared to what he did before.
Well, you're spot on describing his first couple of years. That year one, 22, was all about getting rid of all the money and all the baggage and bringing in young players who you think can develop into good NFL players. Last year, in the draft and in free agency, again, very much the same thing. Trade that first round pick, get a bunch more picks, bring in the young people, rebuild your roster. This year, though, if you look at what they've been doing in free agency, they've been more focused on finding good, but not great, but good veterans who will be day one starters to fill dramatic needs. And then they will continue, to add young talent. But with only four picks right now in the draft, there's only so much they can do with young players. So, as far as what the college game is doing to the NFL, I'm disgusted with college sports. When I went to college, it was about going to school and getting an education. And, now it's like, get the money, you don't need the education. And so it's just disturbing in a lot of ways. But what impact it has on the NFL? I don't know that I agree that the draft is a little weaker this year because of the guys who have stayed in. The really good ones come out to get the money. When you look at these rookie contracts, you look at what these top three quarters are going to get, they're all going to get $30 to $35 million guaranteed. And then after 4 or 5 years, if they're good, they're going to get $100 to $200 million. So, the good players, you're still getting all the talent you want. Can you find starters in the sixth and seventh round? Not as easy, but you can still do it.
Hub Arkish is my guest. He's our experienced NFL reporter on The Score. So when you say, what disgusts you about college football? Because in my world, it's always been about the money. It was just covered up by schools. They were making a ton of money off free labor or labor that was done. Here's your education if you want it, but we need you in the weight room and we need you to be ready on Saturday. So I wonder why you think now you're disgusted with it.
Well, because it didn't used to be this way. It didn't used to be an NIL. And as far as why, you said something interesting that I don't really know the answer to, but who makes money on college football? I mean, the schools have to make money to continue to operate and to continue to educate children. But I don't, know of any jobs or any individuals who are, getting filthy rich over the money as opposed to doing what they're supposed to do. What disgusts me is that all of these players that are in this NIL are on full rides. They're getting paid. They're getting free college educations, which cost, depending on the school, about $100,000, over the 4 years. And so now they're getting that plus, and I don't think they need the plus. They can get the plus when they get out of school. I think that playing in college should be about going to college and being really grateful that you're fortunate enough to be good enough that you can get an education and you can get it for free because you get a scholarship and you're getting paid already. Now you're just getting paid a lot more. And as you say, with what they're getting paid now, it is starting to mess up the games.
See, how about I look at it as if a football player has just simply chosen that as his major. And I don't begrudge him that. You go into school, you choose a major, likely based on your talents, likely based on where you can succeed, with the goal being to make good money, have a job you like, in whatever percentages there are. And I have no problem with the athletes getting paid to follow their major. They maybe you can't get it paid as well as an internship when you're in business school, but I know you get paid well as later on in graduate schools for internships and apprenticeships, things like that. But if you go to school and you're 6'7", 300 pounds, and you have really great feet, you're studying to be not a ballerina, but an offensive tackle. And if you can become a left tackle, that can be your job, and that's where you've earned the right. You've chosen that path the way you choose any kind of path for a career in college.
Yeah, but you're getting paid to earn your job. You're not getting paid for your performance. That's my frustration. And the other issue I have, and I go back to what I said in the beginning, they're already getting paid a lot. What 19 or 20-year-old needs another $2 or $3 million? And are they really doing enough for the university or the program to earn a couple million bucks? Obviously part of this is, as we get older, we change our thoughts on a lot of things, and this is probably one of them. But I think because of the damage that it does seem to be doing to both the college and the pro game in terms of these players moving around and the quality, it frustrates me that they're getting money that they could just wait another year or two for. And again, I go back to the same thing. They're already getting paid a lot of money for kids. None of the other kids in those colleges are getting that kind of money with the free scholarships. It's just these athletes. It's not that I want to take it away from them. It's just that I think it is causing damage to both the pro and college game. And we'll see where it is in a couple more years, because it's only going to get bigger. And it's also, Steve, it's creating a lot of, negative stuff with all these alumni who are providing this NIL money, who are now cheating, and competing to pay off more. And the numbers are just going to keep getting bigger and getting out of hand.
These are just $100 handshakes that are above the table now. They're always were that. They're always were cheats. They're always was payoffs. It's a whole bunch of that. I mean, it goes so far back that Eric Dickerson and the Pony Express they got the death penalty because they were, not that they were dirty like anybody else, they just got caught. They were stupid and got caught. I just think it's been going on for so long. And if you have one of the things taught in schools, especially business schools, one of the things taught is like supply and demand. You have a talent, and you should be able to leverage that for as much money as you can make. They're doing it earlier in college. I just don't have a problem with that.
Well, I don't have a major problem with it. To me, it's pretty easy to see why these games are changing and they're not changing for the better. And I feel like it's taking away everything that was great about college football. That's what bothers me. There's always been cheating, Steve. You're absolutely right. But now they've weaponized it. And now they've made it part of the program. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have a problem with.
Hub Arkish is my guest. We will agree to disagree, as we have on many things. And we're talking NFL football and the draft. And a texter brought up a point, as you and I were discussing what the few draft picks, the four draft picks that Ryan Poles still holds. Number one, we assume, will be Caleb Williams. He's the only quarterback to take the 30 visit to Hallis Hall. The receivers in the draft and the Bears holding the 9th pick, do they have any way, should they have any way, would it be worthwhile trading up to get one of those top three, or if they've identified the number one receiver they want and suddenly he's at 6 or 7?
I don't think it's worth trading up from number 9 for a wide receiver, because you've already got Keenan Allen for this year. And so you've got a whole year, to see what happens next and then make the next adjustments to what you're going to do at that position. So I have no problem if one of the top three, and I think there's a good chance one of the top three will, Neighbors or Odunze, you know, obviously Harrison, I think Harrison's the best player in this draft. He's not going to be there. But after those three, there's another group of about four or five who are also going to be Pro Bowl NFL players, you know, and so I don't know that the top three are that much better than that second category. They're better, or they wouldn't be the top three. But I don't know if they're that much better that I want to give up extra draft picks when I've only got four to start with.
Is there a player in the draft for which you would give up to trade up?
Yeah, I mean, I just said I think Marvin Harrison is going to be the best player in the draft, and it does look now like he could last to four, you know, maybe five. I don't know that he will, and I certainly would consider that. I mean, it would depend on what the price was. I think the price would be, you know, pretty high. If it was at four or five and you were going from nine, it wouldn't have to be another number one, but you don't have twos, and so it's pretty tough to do. You know, I just don't think their needs at offensive tackle are anywhere near as much as people keep making them. You can get better, and if you're already a playoff team and you're trying to get better, that's the kind of move you make. But if you're just trying to get to the next level and you're already in pretty good shape at that position while you have a couple other positions that you really need help at, you know, I certainly wouldn't do that in the first round. But if they were to take another safety, if they were to take a center, you know, I mean, those are taking a center at nine is pretty weird. you know, I think fix the positions you still have to fix before you start trying to get four deep at wide receiver.
Hub Arkish is my guest, senior NFL analyst for The Score. We're talking Bears here, Bears draft, NFL draft, and the Bears are on the clock as they have been seemingly forever. Hub, is the for all of the excitement about getting a quarterback of whatever, I guess he's generational until he's not generational. That's the way you the enthusiasm tells you that's the way to look at it. I find it, I don't know, troubling, I guess. The most important position in Matt Eberflus's defense remains either unfilled or potential unmet. And I realize Dexter only has 1 year. He had a really good second half compared to, say, Jalen Carter, that there were reasons to be excited. But this is not, there's no game record there. There's no line record there. There's not that guy in that position. Should I be troubled by this? Are you troubled by this? Where? How does that position get filled, as important as it is in Matt Eberflus's defense, the three technique?
Well, I'm not troubled by it because they're not terrible at it. They're just not as good as they want to be because the three technique in some respects is the most important position in Matt Eberflus's defensive scheme. And so you want a special three technique. And so it definitely, I think, is an area of need. It is an area that high draft picks would be well spent. I think the problem there is that there's no three techniques in this draft that I would use the first or the ninth pick on. And so that's why I've been saying for quite some time now, and I've changed my mind about trading the first pick only because, you know, things have changed so much just in the last 3 or 4 weeks about McCarthy. And if you don't get him in the top five, I don't think you're going to. And, you know, trading down from one to five isn't going to get you the kind of, you know, wealth that you got by trading that pick last year. But I would still definitely trade the ninth pick to add hopefully another number one, you know, next year and an extra, maybe a two or, you know, a couple more picks for this year. And that's where I could really start to address that three technique the same way you did with Dexter, you know, is get good talent that isn't great talent, but may become great if you can coach him into it.
Xavier Worthy made all kinds of headlines for being very, very fast. Every team wants, needs that guy, the Bears included, like go fast, catch the ball. A lot of guys can go fast. They can't always catch the ball as fast as they're going, but those numbers were eye popping. That guy always, is that a fatal flaw in a lot of GMs? What's the Xavier Worthy, the receiver out of Texas? Where does he stand? Where do you think he goes? How does he play out this year?
Well, he's a really good football player, first of all. And the one thing everybody talks about is that 40 time. I understand that. But, you know, he's certainly a guy of interest. There's no question about that. And, you know, this is where you have this problem with right now. All you have is number one, number nine, and then a three and a four. And I don't think Worthy is still there in the third round, you know, so I don't know how you do that. But that wide receiver position is so deep. I think that there could be, this is going to sound crazy, but there could be, there won't, but there could be as many as 13 or 14 in the first two rounds this year. That's how good all these guys are. And then when you talk about the speed, yeah, I mean, 4.22 is almost unheard of and unnatural, and it's exciting. But what's the difference between 4.22 and 4.33? I mean, you know, as far as being a football player, I find it hard to believe that it makes that much difference. So, you know, we're married to the speed thing, and you definitely want speed at the position. But the fact that this particular guy is, you know, what, 0.3 of a second, you know, faster than anybody else. I just don't know that that is that important.
Hub Arkus is my guest, senior NFL analyst for The Score. We're talking Bears football here. Before I let you go, Hub, I wanted to, if Ryan Poles holds on to the ninth pick, he's there at nine, he's on the clock, and he chooses Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. And I look at that and I go, wow, I think Komet's a top 10 tight end. I think his numbers back that up. I think that was a really smart signing by Ryan Poles. And I think if you're going to emulate what was great in the NFL before Hernandez went to jail, he and Gronk as two tight ends and two wide receivers as tight ends, but big as tight ends and untackleable as tight ends, who matches up with that? And I know I've only seen highlight films of Brock Bowers, and I think this would really be tremendous. What if they take Brock Bowers?
I think that would be a mistake. He's going to be a very good player. But there are a couple question marks on him. He's not quite as big as you would like. And Cole Kmet is evolving into a tight end who may be a better NFL tight end than Bowers. And the veteran free agent they just signed, whose name is not coming to me at the moment, is also a very good tight end.
Everett.
Yeah, so same as some of my other answers. They're not positions of need, and I don't think you're in a position where you can not be drafting not positions of need just to get a little better when you're still not in the playoffs. So, you know, I nothing negative to say about Bauer. I just, you know, don't think he's right for the Bears. And if I could real quick, I want to straighten out one thing we've been talking about for months now. I have said for some time now that I think J.J. McCarthy will be the best NFL quarterback of the group in this draft. That is not a negative on Caleb Williams. You've never heard me say anything negative about Caleb Williams. I just have some questions about, you know, his family's involvement and some of the off-the-field stuff. A lot of that has been solved. I don't have a problem if the Bears take Caleb Williams at number one. I think it makes sense in a lot of respects. I just am afraid that when we get 2-3 years from now, we're going to realize that McCarthy is better. And that's just on studying all his film. I know everybody thinks it's because I went to Michigan. There's a lot of Michigan guys I could promote, and I'm not promoting them. I'm just telling you, J.J. McCarthy may be the next Tom Brady.
Okay. And they have that maize and blue connect the dots right there, that maize and blue DNA. And so does Hub, as a matter of fact. Hub, I appreciate your time. Thanks. Be well.
Always fun, Steve. Talk care. Take care.
Hub Arkus, senior NFL analyst and Michigan alum on The Score. All right, take a break. When we come back, I am calling to order a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club. That's what I do. And I've worn my Snoop Dogg sweatshirt. And I think that's paying full homage to one of the four faces on Mount Cushmore. So I have a couple items about him. And there's dope smoking in a video game. Bless them. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can... I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like... breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like, breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Calling to order the Wake and Bake Club. Thank you for joining me at this meeting. A week ahead of 420, this meeting will go to the only place it could with Snoop Dogg, Wake and Bake Club Hall of Famer, a face on Mount Cushmore. Earlier when I brought that up, so it's Snoop, Cheech and Chong, and Willie Nelson. And we had guesses from Chris Bogosian of my former Chicago Tribune, who said, Spicoli, no, you don't get to advance it. Nice choice, but no. And we had one texter suggest Seth Rogen. And another texter, Wiz Khalifa. There's lots you can.
Can I just say, hearing you mention that 1 week away from 420, man, does that suck that you're not going to have a show on 420?
Yes.
Wow.
It does. I'm not in charge of that. We just won't be here. So you won't be able to get a radio contact high. That's all I can say. But today's topic, the first one with Snoop, is this. It's Snoop Bacon. Now, it's not. You might expect he's infusing bacon with pot, right? Wouldn't that be a natural thing? But this is not that. Apparently, Snoop has a style of cooking bacon, the crispiest bacon ever. Attention, I'm Fat Podcast and Charlie the Bacon Guy. And this comes from the outlet called The Kitchen. I've used The Kitchen. I've gone to The Kitchen. I've gone to the recipes and taken cooking advice from them. And I started in the skillet with bacon. Then I became a baked bacon guy, and I was swearing by it. And now I find this out, that the way Snoop does his bacon is perfect, because of course it is. It's Snoop. So the author in The Kitchen pulls this from Salad Freak, which is Jess Demick's cookbook. She said Snoop taught her how to make the crispiest bacon ever. Demick worked for Martha Stewart for about 10 years, so she spent a lot of time around both Martha and her BFF Snoop in the kitchen. She said one day she watched in shock as Snoop simply dumped a clump of bacon into the pan and casually stirred it around using tongs. For about 15 minutes, just stirred it around. And 15 minutes later, out came perfectly crispy, curly bacon. The author of this kitchen piece says, it went against my every impulse, but I had to try it. Sure enough, this method gives me perfect bacon every single time, and I am never going back. Stirring allows the bacon fat to render more evenly and slowly in perfectly crisp bacon. Because you don't need to lay out the strips in a single layer, you can cook more bacon at a time instead of working in batches. This method works best with bacon that isn't super thick cut because it curls up more easily. The curly texture of the bacon makes it even more crispy than if it was flat. That was a piece from the kitchen on Snoop making bacon. Imagine. We have books and websites treating Snoop Dogg as a culinary genius to go along with his pot legend. The Wake and Bake Club God is cooking and owning God's food.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, another item. More Snoop all the time. The Athletic's Andrew Marchand talked to Peyton Manning recently about joining the Olympic coverage on NBC with fellow host Kelly Clarkson and lead voice Mike Tirico. They're going to be part of Paris, the River Seine. And the opening ceremony will be a float down the river. It will be the first time in opening ceremony's history that it won't be in a stadium. 90 boats carrying thousands of athletes from 200 countries in front of thousands of spectators will float down the river, concluding at the Eiffel Tower. But the real news is this. And this is why we have a Wake and Bake Club meeting. Snoop's going to be there. Snoop's on the payroll. Snoop's the guy. See, the Olympics are continuously trying to keep up with all with the times and with all the popular kids. NBC is taking that next to the next level. They're adding Snoop as a commentator for the summer games in Paris.
Paris.
He will be on site in France. Oh, my God. He will be providing commentary about events. You might remember during the Tokyo Olympics in 2021, delayed a year because of the pandemic, Snoop hosted a Peacock streaming program with Kevin Hart. They were interviewing athletes throughout the games. But this year, he's going to be live in prime time. He'll be on NBC's main network channel. What? Mitch better have his finger on NBC's dump button. That's all I got to say. Now, understand this won't be some flight of fancy for Snoop. He's done even things like play-by-play. His hometown, LA Kings, he's gone on their broadcast and done play-by-play, and he's done commentary. I only hope this leads, because the Olympics are very forward-thinking while they're taking backwards bribes. I hope this leads to making blunt rolling an Olympic event. I want to see Snoop on the medal stand.
Smoke weed every day.
Tyler, do you play Call of Duty?
I actually do not play Call of Duty.
Are you allowed to exist in this sort of scoring? Isn't that required? Like, nobody here sees the sports movies or sees the movies I've seen. I don't know how you get jobs here. And you don't play Call of Duty?
Crazy enough, I do not play Call of Duty, Rosie.
Maybe that's why you suck and you're on Saturday Suckage.
Well, I mean, that goes without saying.
Well, we're saying it. Okay, so I have some news. This comes from GameSpot. It was a GameSpot article. Call of Duty's new Season 3 update has arrived. And that means people are poking around and finding out everything there is to know. This includes the discovery of the game's newest finishing move for the DLC characters Cheech and Chong. The GameSpot article clips this video. It's a secondhand smoke finisher. It involves Cheech and Chong smoking a fat doobie and exhaling through their weapons and into their enemy's face. This is a cartoon, but it happens in a video game. The foe coughs from the smoke cloud and passes out. As your character says, "I smoked you like my favorite strain." It's certainly one of Call of Duty's flashiest finishers, continues the GameSpot article. Legendary stoners Cheech and Chong are coming to the game at some point in the future. They are voiced by Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong, the Cheech and Chong of Cheech and Chong themselves. And one of the death effects, I don't speak game. I'm just reading this GameSpot article. I don't speak video game. One of the death effects for the Cheech and Chong bundle turns your enemies into joints. Can you imagine? I mean, that's a wake and bake club superpower. Then you'd really smoke your enemies. That would be the way to do it. That's a terrific. I think that's outstanding. All right. That is the Wake and Bake Club meeting for today. I'll take a break. And when I come back, I have the best idea for the Chicago White Sox. I'll share that with you on Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Top of the hour, we'll talk Strat-O-Matic with the chief content officer of Strat-O-Matic. They make season projections. Yeah. They did it before a lot of people did. A lot of people you consider having Bibles and being the Bible of today. So we'll talk to John Garcia at the top of the hour. And I want to alert you to this. Listen up, people. Tonight, the Cubs continue their series against the Mariners. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:05. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 8:40. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with a free Odyssey app. And you can listen to this from Chris Getz. He says, the interim general manager of the White Sox, they need a little bit more time to analyze the trends of the guys who keep getting injured and wondering why they keep getting injured, because the same players get injured with the same kind of injuries, doing the same simple things like running to first base. But Chris Getz doesn't want us to be hasty. Yeah, every year, every month. So if you wonder why Pedro Grifol says stupid things, it starts at the top. And actually, the idea of stupid things starts atop that. The biggest positive of the 2024 embarrassment, known as the Chicago Welfare Sox, which is involves sucking and asking for $1 billion for the latest pretty shiny thing, found to be in bed with a billionaire who has done time and who connects to a lot of Chicago corruption, Illinois corruption. Just read the Sun-Times piece online about the guy behind the related Midwest thing. Make up your own mind about whether you feel dirty just reading it. But yes, the greatest positive is we're one day closer to the chairman selling the team. Time marches on, just like the Sox injured list. And don't jump to conclusions because you'll hurt yourself doing it. I have an idea that people talk about, but maybe the wrong destination. People talk about, well, I met with the mayor of Nashville. No, but there's another destination. Montreal. Montreal wants Major League Baseball back. And I'm thinking, in lieu of Major League Baseball, let's give them the White Sox. Now, the idea is we don't just move the Sox out of town. We move them out of the country. How great is that? Monsieur Reinsdorf, move the Sox to Montreal, La Belle Provence. Then they can be exposed. See what I did there? Exposed as an organization that's stuck on stupid and insists on playing its fans the same way. There is some, this is not just, I mean, I do want to give them to Montreal. Here. Por favor. Por favor. S'il vous plaît. There's something called the Montreal Baseball Project. It's aimed at bringing Major League Baseball back to Montreal. The founder and president of the group is Warren Cromartie. Perhaps you remember the name. He's a former Expo. And we tried to get him on. I sent a note to email to Tyler early in the week. I said, let's do this. the idea that he might come on and there might be a team that would move. We would want them to move, want to move the White Sox. And the idea that there really were, you got to look at their uniforms, the joyful red and baby blue. And of course they look better when it was Andre Dawson and Tim Raines and Gary Carter and Warren Cromartie, guys like that wearing it. But I wanted Warren Cromartie to come on. Would you take the White Sox instead of a major league team? Would you take the White Sox now? Nashville gets a lot of pub, but Montreal wants something. And their mission statement, part of the city's fabric for more than a century. Baseball is a wholesome family entertainment option that grows in worldwide popularity every year. With a metropolitan area population of nearly 4 million people, Montreal is currently largest North American city without a baseball franchise. Montreal baseball, again, Montreal is currently the largest North American city without a baseball franchise. Montreal Baseball Project seeks to build upon the recent groundswell of demand for baseball in Montreal and deliver a team back to the community. And that way, if you move the White Sox to Montreal, Chicago could get an expansion team, which is kind of like what you're watching now, but without all the baggage. And that expansion team could be owned by Theo Epstein. Do I have your attention now? Do I have your attention now? It's a good thing I'm so smart. That's all I got to say. The idea that get the Sox out of the country, bring an expansion team somewhere. You could probably put a guaranteed rate field. I bet people will drive there if Theo Epstein owned it. Do you think so? If Theo Epstein owned it, Tyler? If he was the chairman, if he was a head decision maker?
Definitely so.
Yeah.
He broke two very, very old, not just baseball, but sports curses. The guy knows how to win.
I'm aware of that. One of those will come up next hour if I can make it through the story. But the Expos had some glorious times, and their players are, we're talking Pedro Martinez. Randy Johnson was an Expo, but he was better elsewhere. But Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, Gary Carter, Steve Rogers. I mean, that, and in those uniforms, that was just, yeah. And Theo Epstein would own the expansion team in Chicago. And then maybe we wouldn't hear the dumb things that Pedro Grifol says. He was talking about why his team sucks. Only he wasn't using the word sucks. We will, because we choose to be accurate here. And nobody's hitting. Do you detect a trend from this 2-11 team? Nobody's hitting. And the guy who got the biggest contract in Sox history is hitting 140. This is just, I mean, the jokes just write themselves. The jokes don't write themselves. The contracts write the jokes. That's the way it works. So Pedro Grifol was talking about, oh, you look at these guys. These guys have track records. Well, Mike Locks on Twitter looked at those track records after Pedro Grifol said that, while trying to lament. Pedro Grifol just finds a way to say stupid things, or things he thinks a manager should say, or things that sound good in his head, but uh-oh, he didn't workshop them. Or maybe worse, he did. These guys have track records. So Pedro said that. And Mike Locks tweeted out career OPS plus numbers. DeJong, 92. Understand, 100 is, that's where he should be. That's zero. That's ground .0. So DeJong is 92. Lopez, 72. Lee, Corey Lee, 10. And in parentheses, he tweets out, not a typo, it's 10. OPS plus of 10. Martin Maldonado, 71. I think that's his average. Isn't his average 0.071? His OPS plus is 71. Gavin Sheets, 92. This was before he actually had some hits. Kevin Pillar, 87. Ah, Robbie Grossman, 100.
I'll slightly correct you for Martin Maldonado, 0.077.
Oh, okay. His OPS plus is 71.
Such a 71. Big difference there.
Andrew Vaughn, 101. And Andrew Benintendi, $75 million man, 104. Yes, those are the track records, Pedro Grifol. So, I mean, this is a guy who makes the stupid seem like Einstein. Like, he insults the stupid by saying some of these things. And you know the GM he plays for, and you know the owner, the chairman, and so you understand why. They'll just play you for stupid, and you'll like it. And now give they want $1 million. That's what they want. $1 billion. I'm sorry, $1 billion. It's a remarkable thing. And even more remarkable is this summation by Dan Szymborski of Fangraphs. Pretty reputable place, Fangraphs. And he tweeted this out. Good team, colon. It's better to trade a player a year too early than a year too late. Bad team, colon. It's better to trade for a player a year too late than a year too early. White Sox, colon. It's better to sign the player a year too late, but make it for 5 years. Hello, Andrew Benintendi. An OPS plus of 104. Oh, boy. There you go. And they announced 11,000 something at for attendance yesterday. No, they were not there. That's just the announced attendance. I don't believe that to be a turnstile count. So, one of the worst teams in baseball, trying to be one of the worst teams in baseball, succeeding at being one of the worst teams in baseball, refusing to admit to any truths. Let's say we have a lot of the same players get hurt the same way, but let's not jump to any conclusions. And we have guys who can't hit, but these guys have track records. Yes, they have track records of guys who can't hit. They're playing you for stupid, Sox fans, and they're doing it again by asking you for billions to build a shiny new stadium that they don't need, that they filled when they've had a good ball team. Tell you what, you could probably fill guaranteed rate field if you gave Theo Epstein an expansion team. I believe that. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see anything but what's there now. I can take a break. How bad could the Sox be? Or how good could the Cubs be? We're going to ask the guy from Stratomatic that. They, in my world, they originated metrics. For whatever else you know in here, they originated metrics. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Top of the hour, we'll talk Strat-O-Matic with the chief content officer of Strat-O-Matic. They make season projections. Yeah. They did it before a lot of people did. A lot of people you consider having Bibles and being the Bible of today. So we'll talk to John Garcia at top of the hour. And I want to alert you to this. Listen up, people. Tonight, the Cubs continue their series against the Mariners. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:05. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 8:40. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with a free Odyssey app. And you can listen to this from Chris Getz. He says, the interim general manager of the White Sox, they need a little bit more time to analyze the trends of the guys who keep getting injured and wondering why they keep getting injured. Because the same players get injured with the same kind of injuries, doing the same simple things like running to first base. But Chris Getz doesn't want us to be hasty. Yeah, every year, every month. So if you wonder why Pedro Grifol says stupid things, it starts at the top. And actually, the idea of stupid things starts atop that. The biggest positive of the 2024 embarrassment, known as the Chicago Welfare Sox, which is involves sucking and asking for $1 billion for the latest pretty shiny thing, found to be in bed with a billionaire who has done time and who connects to a lot of Chicago corruption, Illinois corruption. Just read the Sun-Times piece online about the guy behind the related Midwest thing. Make up your own mind about whether you feel dirty just reading it. But yes, the greatest positive is we're one day closer to the chairman selling the team. Time marches on, just like the Sox injured list. And don't jump to conclusions because you'll hurt yourself doing it. I have an idea. I have an idea that people talk about, but maybe the wrong destination. People talk about, well, I met with the mayor of Nashville. No, but there's another destination. Montreal. Montreal wants Major League Baseball back. And I'm thinking, in lieu of Major League Baseball, let's give them the White Sox. Now, the idea is we don't just move the Sox out of town. We move them out of the country. How great is that? Monsieur Reinsdorf moved Le Sox to Montreal, La Belle Provence. Then they can be exposed. See what I did there? Exposed as an organization that's stuck on stupid and insists on playing its fans the same way. There is some, this is not just, I mean, I do want to give them to Montreal here. Por favor. Por favor. S'il vous plaît. There's something called the Montreal Baseball Project. It's aimed at bringing Major League Baseball back to Montreal. The founder and president of the group is Warren Cromartie. Perhaps you remember the name. He's a former Expo. And we tried to get him on. I sent a note to email to Tyler early in the week. I said, let's do this. The idea that he might come on, and there might be a team that would move. We would want them to move, want to move the White Sox. And the idea that there really were, you got to look at their uniforms, the joyful red and baby blue. And, of course, they look better when it was Andre Dawson and Tim Raines and Gary Carter and Warren Cromartie, guys like that wearing it. But I wanted Warren Cromartie to come on. Would you take the White Sox instead of a major league team? Would you take the White Sox now? Nashville gets a lot of pub, but Montreal wants something. And their mission statement, part of the city's fabric for more than a century. Baseball is a wholesome family entertainment option that grows in worldwide popularity every year. With a metropolitan area population of nearly 4 million people, Montreal is currently largest North American city without a baseball franchise. Montreal baseball, again, Montreal is currently the largest North American city without a baseball franchise. Montreal Baseball Project seeks to build upon the recent groundswell of demand for baseball in Montreal and deliver a team back to the community. And that way, if you move the White Sox to Montreal, Chicago could get an expansion team, which is kind of like what you're watching now, but without all the baggage. And that expansion team could be owned by Theo Epstein. Do I have your attention now? Do I have your attention now? It's a good thing I'm so smart. That's all I got to say. The idea that get the Sox out of the country, bring an expansion team somewhere. You could probably put a guaranteed rate field. I bet people will drive there if Theo Epstein owned it. Do you think so? If Theo Epstein owned it, Tyler? If he was the chairman, if he was the head decision maker?
Definitely so.
Yeah.
He broke two very, very old, not just baseball, but sports curses. The guy knows how to win.
I'm aware of that. One of those will come up next hour if I can make it through the story. But the Expos had some glorious times, and their players are, we're talking Pedro Martinez. Randy Johnson was an Expo, but he was better elsewhere. But Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, Gary Carter, Steve Rogers. I mean, that, and in those uniforms, that was just, yeah. And Theo Epstein would own the expansion team in Chicago. And then maybe we wouldn't hear the dumb things that Pedro Grifol says. He was talking about why his team sucks. Only he wasn't using the word sucks. We will, because we choose to be accurate here. And nobody's hitting. Do you detect a trend from this 2-11 team? Nobody's hitting. And the guy who got the biggest contract in Sox history is hitting 140. This is just, I mean, the jokes just write themselves. The jokes don't write themselves. The contracts write the jokes. That's the way it works. So Pedro Grifol was talking about, oh, you look at these guys. These guys have track records. Well, Mike Locks on Twitter looked at those track records after Pedro Grifol said that, while trying to lament. Pedro Grifol just finds a way to say stupid things, or things he thinks a manager should say, or things that sound good in his head, but uh-oh, he didn't workshop them. Or maybe worse, he did. These guys have track records. So Pedro said that. And Mike Locks tweeted out career OPS plus numbers. DeJong, 92. Understand, 100 is, that's where you should be. That's zero. That's ground point zero. So DeJong is 92. Lopez, 72. Lee, Corey Lee, 10. And in parentheses, he tweets out, not a typo, it's 10. OPS plus of 10. Martin Maldonado, 71. I think that's his average. Isn't his average 0.071? His OPS plus is 71. Gavin Sheets, 92. This was before he actually had some hits. Kevin Pillar, 87. Ah, Robbie Grossman, 100.
I'll slightly correct you for Martin Maldonado, 0.077.
Oh, okay. His OPS plus is 71.
Such a big difference there.
Andrew Vaughn, 101. And Andrew Benintendi, $75 million man, 104. Yes, those are the track records, Pedro Grifol. So, I mean, this is a guy who makes the stupid seem like Einstein. Like, he insults the stupid by saying some of these things. And you know the GM he plays for, and you know the owner, the chairman, and so you understand why. They'll just play you for stupid, and you'll like it. And now give they want $1 million. That's what they want. $1 billion. I'm sorry, $1 billion. It's a remarkable thing. And even more remarkable is this summation by Dan Szymborski of Fangraphs. Pretty reputable place, Fangraphs. And he tweeted this out. Good team, colon. It's better to trade a player a year too early than a year too late. Bad team, colon, it's better to trade for a player a year too late than a year too early. White Sox, colon, it's better to sign the player a year too late, but make it for 5 years. Hello, Andrew Benintendi. An OPS plus of 104. Oh, boy. There you go. And they announced 11,000 something at for attendance yesterday. No, there were not there. That's just the announced attendance. I don't believe that to be a turnstile count. So, one of the worst teams in baseball, trying to be one of the worst teams in baseball, succeeding at being one of the worst teams in baseball, refusing to admit to any truths. Let's say we have a lot of the same players get hurt the same way, but let's not jump to any conclusions. And we have guys who can't hit, but these guys have track records. Yes, they have track records of guys who can't hit. They're playing you for stupid, Sox fans, and they're doing it again by asking you for billions to build a shiny new stadium that they don't need, that they filled when they've had a good ball team. Tell you what, you could probably fill guaranteed right field if you gave Theo Epstein an expansion team. I believe that. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see anything but what's there now. I can take a break. How bad could the Sox be? Or how good could the Cubs be? We're going to ask the guy from Stratomatic that. They, in my world, they originated metrics. For whatever else you know in here, they originated metrics. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.